Oh my God, this looks
scary.
Yeah. Oh, it worked.
Yeah, there it is. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Armchair Expert. I'm Dan Shepherd. I'm joined by Monica Mouse.
Hi there.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Do you think I have nerves or something before we start? Why do I have all these gastrological issues?
Yeah.
And is it probably not gastrological? It's probably gastronomy.
No, it's gastrointestinal.
Oh.
I would say.
I didn't want to say intestines in the intro.
Well, you burped. You didn't care about that.
I guess not.
Anyway.
Anywho.
Yeah, I think you do. I think you have a little bit of anxiety nerves about talking to me because I'm so powerful.
I believe it. And I'm like Robert Durst, where I start burping when I'm nervous. I got it all figured out. So does Luke Wilson. Oh, what a blast from the past.
So fun. It was memory lane episodes.
Yeah, big time memory lane as we talk about the shared experience of having been in Idiocracy, a movie that not one human saw and then has become kind of a cult classic where it's seemingly everyone has seen it.
It's
a very wild experience.
So cool. Such a good movie.
I hope someday Hit and Run's that way.
It will.
Okay. I'm not here to promote me. I'm talking about Luke Wilson. I fell in love with him in Bottle Rocket. We talk about that a bunch. It's in my top three comedies.
And Royal Tenenbaums is in my top five. I love that movie so much.
Let's not forget the genre-shattering old school, which brought back the R-rated comedy.
I know.
He's done it all. He's seen it all. He is in a new movie called 12 Mighty Orphans, a very cool historical movie about an orphanage who ended up going to the state championship in Texas, where you know they love them football.
Ding, 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 state champs.
Ding, 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 little Mr. Football.
Ding, ding, ding. Yet?
Oh, little Mr. Basketball.
That is it. That wasn't little Mr. Basketball. That was just
Mr. Basketball.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, McConaughey was little Mr. Handsome.
Texas.
Oh, Texas.
Oh,
Jesus. Louise. Good night, everybody. Once again, July 1st, please come listen to us for free. The same show that hopefully you enjoy starting July 1st on Spotify only.
And we'll do less burping there. Just kidding. Same amount.
Well, yeah, same amount. Same amount. Please enjoy Luke Wilson. We are supported by Bombas, our favorite socks.
Oh my God. I got a couple more pairs.
Mm-hmm.
I was so thrilled. I want to replace all my socks with Bombas slowly.
We love Bombas. We love them. Listen, lots of things can make your workouts hard. Extra resistance, double speed, one more mile. Your socks shouldn't, though. That's why Bombas performance socks are built to be nothing but comfortable and supportive. We love their performance socks.
I love them because they are the perfect amount of thickness. Just thick enough to be cushy, but not too thick. It's crazy.
You nailed it. Too big of a sock is a bummer. Also, let me tell you that they are stitched with special moisture wicking yarn and temperature regulating vents that allow cool airflow in and prevent overheating. That's number one on my priority list.
I have to wear Bombas to work out, especially to run. Like, I have to. So
the dirty or clean.
So yeah. If I've run out of clean, I go back to the dirty.
I tip my hat to that behavior. Listen, go to bombas.com/dax today and get 20% off your first order. That's bombas.com/dax for 20% off. bombas.com/dax. We are supported by Shady Rays. Shady Rays is an independent sunglass company, so they do things their way, something that is very rare in their industry. They never understood why sunglasses were so expensive, so they set out to change it. Shady Rays are premium polarized shades at a fraction of the price of the big name brands. Stop overpaying for sunglasses that you're too afraid to get dirty. Save your dollars and gain peace of mind with the best and most affordable shades for the outdoors. The best part about Shady Rays, they have the craziest warranty in all of eyewear. If you lose or break your shades on day one, they told us they will send you a brand new pair. No questions asked.
Oh, wow.
Shady Rays is guaranteed for life. So take on your next adventure with the team that has your back. They have free returns and exchanges. You either love the shades or Shady Rays will pay to ship them back. That's it. Change the way you wear sunglasses and give Shady Rays a risk-free shot. We think you're going to love them. And if they're not for you, you can return them for free anyways. Exclusively for Armchairies, Shady Rays is running their deepest deal of the season. Use code ARMCHAIR for 50% off two or more pairs at ShadyRays.com. Buy one, get one free. You can get two pairs for $48. Redeem only at ShadyRays.com, where you can find all their newest and best shades. He's an armchair expert.
Thank you.
So, Monica, what you'll discover about Luke is his true passion in life is musicians. Is that fair to say?
I mean, it's what I like to read about and stuff like that. Well, I just let's preface it also by saying I don't have a band.
Okay. You yourself are not a musician.
Oh, my God. That Texas charm did not disappear.
I don't play an instrument. Going to be on a double bill with Russell Crowe and 30-odd foot of grunt.
Man, all I need is like snippets from you, and then it just reminds me of so many things I know about you. Like right there, you just hit us with it. Like, I remember, well, you love musicians, and then I remember too, like, you don't suffer bullies.
That's a great quality.
It is, but I had kind of forgotten that that was part of your makeup. And right, you don't suffer bullies.
I mean, that's a funny thing to say. I don't, I was just told by somebody close to me, I've got to start letting things kind of wash over me and just not get worked up about it.
Do you think it's from being...
What, being the youngest of three?
Yeah.
I mean, I always really got along and get along with those guys, my two older brothers, and they get along with each other. I mean, not, of course, that we didn't ever have dust-ups and physical altercations, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like kind of everybody's that way. And if something like that happens, I'll think, well, if this guy's doing it to me, what's he going to do to somebody that... And that's really defenseless. And that's not a good way to think either.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to make things right with this guy.
Well, the fact that you're even thinking it on those levels of like, this guy's on a war path, who will stand up to this guy?
Right. What it winds up is like, hey, is there room on that war path for both of us?
I think that's noble that you're like, okay, there's other people who need protection here. That's what you do.
It's identical, which is why I remembered so clearly. I was like, oh, right, we both have that. Another funny thing I remember that we both had. In fact, you articulated it in a way that I hadn't really thought of. But we were kind of talking about getting recognized. And mind you, I was about 11 minutes into getting recognized, but you'd already been at it for 5 or 6 years.
Right.
And you said, well, the only thing that I don't really like is when that guy at the bar comes over and says, apparently you're fucking somebody. My girlfriend thinks you're fucking somebody. And the second you said it, I remembered all 300 times that's happened to me.
My girlfriend says you're somebody. Who the fuck are you, dude?
It's such a great way to start a conversation.
Well, I was, before coming to do this, I was thinking back on Idiocracy, too. Because I will watch Idiocracy when it's on here and there. When I always think about with you and your characters, it's like to play a guy as dumb as you were playing him. I don't think people usually do it well. It's like people playing stoners. To me, they always kind of overdo it or get it wrong, where you think about like Spicoli or like the dude, how great those are.
Yeah, they're not tipping it at all.
Right, and it's almost like these are guys that are trying really hard to think and keep it together and not get behind the eight ball. But that's what I loved about you playing that character. It was like really a guy just kind of completely on his own, like really doing his best. When I just recently watched it again, you did a thing where we're in court together and you were like, I object. And it was like you were hearing the echo of your own voice and kind of like, whoa, I object.
Oh, my God. I have to have clearer memories of the whole experience than you do for two reasons. One, it was only the second movie I was ever in, so it was still very novel. And then two, I was a huge fan of yours, so I was like very excited to be working with you, and I was really paying attention to anything you said. So I guarantee I have so many memories of things you said, but one of them, which was really funny, was Luke's looking around and he just goes like, he's trying to figure out what movie I'm in. And he's like, he's paired with me, who's, I'm going 3,000%. Well, and you were the only sane person in the universe.
I can remember asking Mike, like, there'd be certain jokes, and I'd say, you know, can we get away with this? And Mike would be like, well, you don't think it's funny? And I was like, no. I was like, I think it's funny, but I shouldn't be the mark of whether or not something's funny or not.
Oh.
But yeah, that was quite an experience. That is one of those movies where since it became popular with people in retrospect. And I can still remember it being a Wednesday. I had the LA Times just kind of flipping through it, and I get to a really small ad in the movie ads, and it was like a Michelangelo drawing.
Right, right.
And it was the movie coming out that day, and the studio had dumped it. They'd completely gotten rid of it.
Yeah.
And I think they only released it in 7 theaters. But anyhow, it's got to be the same with you. That's the movie that gets brought up maybe the most, along with a couple of others.
I was going to ask you that because, yeah, similarly, I think that's certainly the most staying power. Yeah. And then it seems to keep getting more and more relevant, which is very weird.
I know. Like, and then it makes me have the classic thing like, God, I wish I'd done a better job or concentrated more. And I was like, no, I think that's in keeping with the whole movie. But I've definitely tried to get Mike to do another one. I've said like, what if you and me and Terry came back to the present day, and then my ending for the movie was, who knows what happens, but like, you do become president, Terry winds up taking over like a movie studio.
Oh my God. It is among the weirdest experiences I've had doing a movie in that, like, we both read that script. It's still probably the funniest script I ever read in my life.
Yeah.
Where I just was like, oh my God, each page, there's an incredible joke. Whether it's like the billboard of the cigarettes, like, if you don't smoke Carlton, fuck you. Right. Or whatever they were.
Right.
Or that Fuddruckers had slowly evolved into butt fuckers.
Right.
Like all these little things that were in writing. And you were kind of like, how do they execute this? So you just went in kind of going like, well, it's the greatest script and I love Mike Judge and he's brilliant. But what'll happen?
Yeah.
And then you're there and you're like, oh, this is the future. Okay, so then, you're just trying to wrap your head around it. And then it disappears. Like, as you say, it sits on a shelf for like a year and a half or 2 years. And then it comes out and no one has seen it. No one sees it for at least a year and a half before someone says something. And then it just gains momentum.
And I don't even know how, I can't even remember how people would have started to see it, whether it was like rentals or DVDs. I mean, it has to go back to DVDs at that point.
Yeah, 2004 DVDs and maybe Showtime or something.
Right. But like Time Magazine has like written essays about it. And I remember like like Jackson Browne told me he loved it. And I was like, Jackson, this is like this sensitive singer-songwriter. Like, I remember hearing that Axl Rose loved it.
Oh, really?
Like, wow,
like,
that's exciting.
Yeah.
Mm. Wow.
But definitely have never had a movie like that where it's just disappeared and then come back with so many people getting a kick out of it.
Yeah, and even like the election, I guess 4 years ago, they were doing screenings all around town.
That's when it really, I feel like, came back big time.
Yeah.
Well, I can remember when he was elected that there was somebody in the Trump cabinet from Carl's Jr. I was like, okay, really, there was a cabinet member. And I thought, yeah, that's pretty unbelievable.
Pretty great.
That's some real foresight.
But I wonder if you have the feeling I do too. It's like people will stop and give me a compliment about Idiocracy. And of anything I've ever done, I feel the least entitled to take a compliment about that movie.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Because to me, it felt kind of completely out of my hands to where, like, that's what I mean about wishing I'd had another shot at it to, like, concentrate more because it just, like you said, you read the script. It was really funny. You got there. It was kind of an odd but fun shoot. And doing it in Austin and doing it with Mike. And I know what you mean about not saying like, thank you, as if you had like something to do with
it. To me, it's just like,
that's what you have to realize is you did. And that's what I mean about playing that character. Cause it doesn't work if you've got somebody just doing it in the wrong way or if it doesn't ring true.
Well, that's what was dicey too, is like we would get to work any given day and there'd be more people playing dumb. So you really didn't know what was on the menu any day.
I remember there was one guy where I was like, so how is this going to work with this guy in the scene? And Mike was like, don't worry, he's a DJ from Waco. And I was like, that's what you're going to tell me when I'm trying to like make a scene work? It's all going to wash out in the end because this guy's a DJ from Waco.
Once the America finds out he's a DJ, it'll be fine. And then also like members of the Ghetto Boys would show up. It was fantastic.
Wow.
And then there'd be guys that Mike went to UCSD with, and like guys that were also studied like chemistry.
Wait, there were characters?
No, like
they were just visited set.
A mix.
Okay.
Well, so they'd visit, and then they'd be in a scene the next day. Yeah.
Right. And then I remember there was one guy who Mike went to college with, and the guy was like a physicist or something, and of course he's playing a moron.
Right.
Looks like
a moron.
Yeah, but he's actually kind of a semi-genius. But yeah, he has a real like appreciation for characters.
Oh, yeah, it was really fun though, because it was just leading into summer in Austin.
Right.
And I was, per your recommendation, I think, because you had Austin all dialed in. You'd already shot there.
Right.
Old School had just come out, by the way, when we started this movie. He was in the biggest comedy of the summer.
Yeah, I mean, Austin now, that was like the last great period to me in Austin, and not to sound like one of those old guys talking about the old days. But, you know, what was so fun about Austin is you could go there, no traffic, bomb around town, eat anywhere.
Yeah. You could get a table at Guero's in 5 minutes.
Exactly.
I remember when we were making that movie, I was kind of in love with it because it reminded me of Michigan, and that there was like grass growing out of all the sidewalks and stuff, and it was humid and lots of places to swim. And I started getting obsessed with I want to buy a house in the lake here. And I was looking at shit the whole time we were there. You couldn't spend $700,000. You couldn't do it. Like, you could buy a mansion on 2 acres on Lake Austin. And now we rented a house there, the three of us.
Years ago.
Yeah, we did a live show there, and we were in a very average house that was $4.5 million we Zillowed. And I was like, wow, man, it really changed.
And I had friends over the years that they'd move from one house to another, and they'd say, hey, I'll sell you this house for what I bought it for a couple of years ago. And I just kind of stupidly never did it.
Yeah.
But yeah, just like you were saying, it reminded me of from Dallas. So I would just reminded me of Dallas, the way it smelled and looked. And even just things like storms, when storms would roll in, you'd think, gosh, I really miss that.
Me too.
Being in L.A.
Wait, so if you had just done Old School and then you were on this set, were you like, oh no.
He can't say it, but I think there was a little bit of him that was uh-oh.
Well, just because you just were in the biggest comedy, and then it's like, okay, here's my shot to follow that up, and this is a shit show.
Get this guy in his second movie doing a weird character.
Yeah, no, I never thought of it as here's my shot to be on my own, but I think just we could relax knowing Mike was at the helm, but still that kind of humor, where it's funny when you're out or when we're sitting here talking about it or kidding about it, but when you're doing a movie and it's scripted and Terry Crews has got my head and saying shit, I thought your head would be bigger. I was gosh, is this kind of fly? So it was kind of being at the state fair every day, to where it was
sometimes
you'd be trying to get to set and somebody would be like, you're funny looking. Where it'd start kind of jogging to set or taking the back way so you didn't get accosted.
Oh my God.
That was another thing I remember is Mike saying you think Andrew would want to play Beef Supreme? And then me having to call Andrew up and be like, yeah, I'm working with Mike, on that movie in Texas. There's a character he wants you to play. It's named Beef Supreme. It's kind of this.
He's kind of a god.
Yeah, he's kind of this crazy god that terrorizes people. The only thing I'm concerned about with you is you not getting your knighthood after the Prince Harry interview. I mean, I know you'd always been kind of angling towards that.
You've known me now for 16 years. Yeah, that was one of the first things I told you.
Yeah, the knighthood. You wanted to be there with McCartney and
Sir
Mick
Anthony.
Jagger and Ian McKellen.
Sure. Well, I think the first time you came into my trailer, I had a big Anthony Hopkins poster. Okay, I got to tell a couple more funny Austin stories. One was... So it was my second movie. I'm trying to act like I know what's going on. But
I can't believe it was only your second movie.
I don't know what's going on, right? And there's a point where we're in Frito's apartment. It's Luke and I in a scene, and they're going to put a different lens on the camera. And then when they do that, they're going to have me stand in a different spot, which I don't understand yet. So I go, Mike, I was standing over here. And he goes, but in the movie, it'll look like you're over there. And I was like, But I'm over here.
Oh, and you were fighting back on it?
I was confused. Okay. I didn't understand that I could be standing in two different places and somehow it would look the same in the movie. And Luke goes, once you've been in this business for more than 5 minutes, bud, you'll get all this stuff. And then I got defensive and embarrassed. And I fired right back with a, well, I did not get the training and education you received in Home Fries. So, yeah, I'm a little behind the eight ball. And then, like an hour later, he just goes, hey, bud, you really got me with that Home Fries comment.
Yeah, that's when you realize that, like, throwing those zingers, like, yeah, sometimes you can hurt somebody's feelings. And it's like you throw what you think's a harmless zinger and somebody zings your back. You're like, oh, shit, now that hurt. I thought we had a certain level we were going at.
It's as if, and I wouldn't put it past me, that I was just waiting for you to expose me and I had it in the chamber. I bet I had it in the chamber. Which is terrible, but I think probably true.
See, I apologize. It's like Will Ferrell and I, we'd have this thing where we'd be like, look, I've been in this business since 1997, okay? I think I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And it was really funny when it was like 99 or 2000. Yeah. And I did recently say it while working, and people thought I was serious.
Yeah, because it's 24 years.
Yeah, I know, and I was like, God, that's just now not funny on so many levels that the joke doesn't work anymore.
So I got sober for that movie, but we had a read through and then we had a week off.
I remembered you were sober on that.
Yeah, but we had a read through and then I went out on 6th Street and then I found a bunch of blow. And then during this read through thing, we had a cast dinner just before the movie started at some restaurant. And I went into the bathroom and I blew my nose and I had done such damage that it just started uncontrollably bleeding. Yeah. And I'm talking a ton of blood. Yeah. And I was just sitting in this bathroom, like just dealing with the fallout of that little slip from before. And I'm like, how long am I going to be? And when I come out, if I can't get this under control, I'm going to have to come up with tissue in my nose, I suppose.
Which would have seemed kind of in character, man. This guy's already gotten started on his character.
You got on your second movie.
I remember how on point you were on that, because I can remember days coming in and not feeling great and like looking over at you looking, you know, bright-eyed and bushy. Tailed and being kind of envious.
Sure, sure.
You hadn't been out burning the candle.
Yeah, which brings me to, so yeah, we would have a couple like occasionally. Yeah, it was some curiosity to you that I was sober, of course. And then I was like, yeah, well, I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict and everything. And you would be like, how bad has it gotten? And I would kind of like tell you like, well, this is when I discovered you read so many books about musicians, because you're like, yeah, like it sounded manageable to you.
Yeah, which now, knowing what I know now, I'm embarrassed that I was even asking you about it, but you were kind of open about it. But yeah, you hear people saying that. And this person said, well, why not give it a try? Which I hope I didn't say anything like that. But I was certainly curious, more out of kind of admiration for what you were doing, especially being in a town like Austin, which is just known for being kind of like a good time.
The one night I partied there, it was exceptional. I couldn't have done, I wouldn't have been at work, I think, if I would have tried to run it there. And then you had a buddy who had a speedboat. We went out on the speedboat. We went swimming at his house. We went skinny dipping together. Do you remember that?
Of course.
Oh, your man doesn't forget. There's a headline for
that
us.
That was out on Lake Austin.
Lake Austin.
Right.
Yeah. And then at Charles's house, we did some skinny dipping.
Right.
Yeah,
great
in the evening.
Spot.
Yeah. Real secluded. Spot. Real private. Very private.
I think it's just because we didn't have any trunks. It wasn't as if we were trying to.
No. Yeah. It's like we ended up back there and it was a warm night. This pool was calling.
You don't have to justify it.
Yeah. It was Bree and I forget your then girlfriend's name. And then I and you. And yeah, we just got in the raw and took a dip. It was great. Now, did you guys make the Bottle Rocket short in Austin?
We made it in Dallas.
Oh, in Dallas.
Yeah.
And how about the feature?
Made the feature in Dallas, and then that little motel sequence that's in the movie, we did that in Hillsboro, Texas, which is incidentally Willie Nelson's hometown. Hillsboro is actually right between Dallas and Waco.
Oh, okay. Have you seen Bottle Rocket?
Yes.
It's the greatest.
So
when people ask, in my top three comedies, Bottle Rocket is next to Raising Arizona.
Just like what you were saying about not feeling like he can take credit
really?
For it. I mean, definitely. That's another one where I'm always just so thankful that people like it, but still find myself just shocked that it ever got made.
Oh my God. It's a perfect, perfect comedy. Oh, there's something too. I guess like Wes's movies got more complicated and interesting and more meticulous.
Right.
But they're visual.
And those are awesome. I love how it's evolved. But there was something so, you know how they say like a musician, their first album they wrote their whole life.
Right.
And there's some vibe to that movie where I'm like, oh, these are three people that have been waiting to be artistic their whole life.
Yeah, maybe there's something to be said for that. It is incredible that that movie got made and how it got made. And like you mentioned, the short. There was a guy in Dallas that we kind of knew named Kit Carson, and we had a whole script. And Kit had co-written the remake of Breathless with this guy, Jim McBride, which we always loved as kids, the one with Richard Gere.
Yeah, yeah, like, I love that
You know,
movie.
People would bring up the original. And we'd be like, never seen it, but the one with Richard Gere is incredible.
Same. I had no idea it was a remake.
Oh, yeah. No, and cinephiles would look at you like you were insane. But we loved that movie. And then Kit was really helpful and with Owen and Wes, and he said, can't get the money for a whole script, so why don't you guys try and whittle it down, the parts of the script, so you can make a short. So did that and then took it to Sundance. And at Sundance, this woman, Barbara Boyle, found it. And she was kind of a longtime producer. And then she got it to this woman, Polly Platt. And she was, at the time, James L. Brooks's kind of partner. She'd shown James L. Brooks the short, and then kind of that's how we got on the road with him producing it, and then Columbia eventually making it. And at one point, I just remember Columbia said, like, okay, we'll make the movie. We just don't want to make it with these guys acting in it.
Sure.
I did just what you just said. I was like, sure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I was like, very reasonable. We get them on the next one, you know. We'll do locations on this or whatever. Have Wes direct it. And then, yeah, Owen and Wes were like, what do you mean? That sounds great to you. Like, we got to do this together.
I don't know if you told me the story or Owen told me the story, but one of the funniest stories I've heard about Bottle Rocket, and I've since told everyone who would listen, was that I guess there was a point in pre-production maybe where James L. Brooks was like, oh my God, you know what shirts you guys should wear in this movie? You know what I'm thinking of? Uh-huh. Okay, so maybe Owen told me. But he goes, you guys should definitely wear these shirts. Do you know these shirts? They're collared and they're kind of, oh my gosh, what is it? And then he calls his assistant on a phone on the desk and goes, what are the shirts I wear? Tommy Bahamas. It has nothing to do with the Tommy Bahamas. It's the fact that he covered the mouthpiece and said, right. Tommy Bahamas.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was James L. Brooks.
Tommy Bahama. So when that movie came out, this would be probably one of the movies that I would be wrong about. So in my mind, Swingers is a humongous movie, right? Like, right. I don't know anyone that didn't see Swingers.
Right.
But then when I look it up, I'm like, oh my God, I think only $3 million. I guess just all of everyone I knew saw that
right.
movie. Similarly, Bottle Rocket didn't necessarily make a bunch of money,
I guarantee it didn't make what Swingers made.
Okay, but everyone saw it.
After it had came out.
Okay, not in the theaters.
No, it kind of came and went in 2 weeks. Kenneth Turan in the LA Times gave it a really good review.
Uh-huh.
That was kind of helpful, but yeah, nobody saw it.
Are you clocking how he knows names?
It's very impressive.
Yeah, like the fact that you remember the name of that reviewer is bonkers.
He's kind of a well-known reviewer, but I mean, in terms of like age and names, like it's getting shocking how bad it is. Like seeing people you know and forgetting their names to where I feel like I might have like the Alzheimer's dementia thing where I can remember like the old days.
Sure,
but if you were to ask me about like yesterday or earlier today or who I'm working with next month. But another funny thing, I mean, you talk about like Idiocracy being your second movie. And it is funny that you can get thrown into something like that unless you have somebody kind of looking out for you or to give you advice, which you probably didn't have.
No.
We definitely didn't have when we were on the feature of Bottle Rocket. So we'd never been around a big crew like that. And it was still a smaller crew, but it was like 60 people.
Yeah.
And after the first week, I'd said to Owen, have you seen this guy that's sitting right beside the cameraman? Like, we knew Bob Yeoman. He was the cinematographer, and he was, like, behind the camera. Like, not Bob Yeoman, but this other guy that's sitting right there. And Owen's like, yeah, I've seen that guy. And I'm like, he just sits there and stares at us. Like, I get it. Like, he doesn't think this is funny. It's not his brand of humor. But why does he got to sit, like, right there, just expressionless? And we later find out that this is the focus puller.
Right, he's keeping your image
right,
sharp.
Right, this guy, John Boccaccio, who was hilarious and was a really nice guy, but... That's one of those things where, like, Owen was like, yeah, I've seen this guy. It's just unbelievable.
He hates the movie.
That's what I kept going to. Like, this guy hates us.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a whole theory on this. It's probably not current. It's probably a theory I shouldn't say, but I understand why so many actresses fall for cameramen. It's a pretty well-worn thing in our business, and it's pretty much because they just stare at you all day. Completely expressionless. Right. So they will not give you approval.
Right.
If there was a pretty girl that stared at me all day long and wouldn't even smile, I'd be so intrigued.
Yet was there to make you look your best.
Yes. And never smiled to say it was going well.
And always dressed kind of cool.
Yeah, they're very like, again, a stereotype, but masculine. They're like quiet, a lot of pockets, like they could be on safari.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of years ago, I worked with Roger Deakins.
Oh, the DP.
But he was, just incredibly cool. And his whole crew was cool. Like they wore each guy wore Levi's and a certain kind of boots and a certain kind of fleece jacket. So that was like the ultimate. They were like this cool gang.
Yeah.
And then he's just like what you were saying. He has this kind of mane of gray hair and kind of...
If that hair could tell a story.
If we'd have known now what we knew then...
We would have been behind the camera.
Behind the camera. Yeah. You're working your way back there.
I am. I'm trying to get away from it.
Yeah, but he's not quiet or expressionless.
Stay tuned for more Armchair Expert, if you dare.
We are supported by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Now, whether you're struggling with anxiety or depression, need help with relationships, or are having difficulty meeting your goals, online therapy might be for you. We both love therapy. We swear by it. We're committed to it.
It's a huge part of my life and what I believe in.
This podcast likely wouldn't exist without the assistance of some therapists.
I think that's true.
BetterHelp helps you assess your needs to match you with a professional licensed therapist. You can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. It is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. Therapists have a broad range of expertise that may not be locally available in your area. Schedule weekly video, phone, or even live chat sessions with your therapist. Log into your account anytime and send a message. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great matches, so it's easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more convenient and more affordable than in-person therapy, and financial aid is available. Armchairies get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/dax. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/dax.
We are supported by ButcherBox. Are you itching for the outdoors? It's grilling season, baby. Get ready for that summer cookout. Not everyone has convenient access to high-quality meat. You know, good, grass-fed, quality meat.
I mean, my favorite part, the fact that they had free bacon for life and that I got in on that is insane. I can hardly believe it's real. ButcherBox believes everyone deserves high-quality, humanely sourced meat. ButcherBox couldn't be easier. You just sign up, select your box, and they ship it right to your door every month. And new members will get free bacon for life when they sign up.
Wow.
Who does not love free bacon? Now, all their meat is free of antibiotics and added hormones. Each box has 9 to 11 pounds of meat, enough for 24 individuals, packed fresh, shipped frozen, and vacuum sealed so it stays that way. You can customize your box or go with theirs. Either way, you get exactly what you want. ButcherBox is a no-brainer. Backed by popular demand, receive bacon for life. Right now, new members can get bacon for life when they sign up. Just go to butcherbox.com/dax. And on top of that, for all the armchairies, ButcherBox is offering $10 off your first box. Just go to butcherbox.com/dax for $10 off your first box, plus a package of free bacon in every box for the life of your subscription when you go to butcherbox.com/dax.
Wait, I have a question though, just going back. Did you guys
always have this plan of we're going to make movies since you were young. How did it work? How did it all come together?
I mean, we were just always really into movies.
Yeah.
And I mean, just like I just always kind of figured most kids were, but maybe the way some kids are into sports or sports teams, that's how we were about movies and kind of seeing stuff and sneaking into stuff that we couldn't get into, like rated R movies. That was kind of like our focus. But yeah, it's not as if we were making Super 8 movies.
Right.
And I think maybe Wes was.
Yeah.
And then when Owen met Wes at the University of Texas in Austin, I think Owen was interested in writing and acting, and Wes was interested in writing and directing. And that's kind of how it got started.
And they knew that you were interested too. So they were just come along.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I was around and I was kind of
free.
Yeah, exactly. I happened to be free at the time in the summer of 93.
Okay, so back to the childhood thing. Your parents are interesting, right? Your dad worked in advertising and...
My dad, he had a little advertising company. And then before that, he was the station manager for the public television station in Dallas. It was called Channel 13, KERA. That's where they first showed Monty Python in the States.
Oh, really?
Through Channel 13, because a friend of my dad's had the album and said, like, we should really get these guys on the air. And so, yeah, he did that for 10 years and then started this little advertising company and then wrote a couple books about politics. And my mom's a photographer.
First of all, I know all three of you, and you're all so fucking interesting. Truly, the amount all three of you read is incredible. You're also uniquely different, but yet you do have this unique proprietary Wilson thing. I think that's why people are so captivated with you guys when you came to LA. I remember I wasn't big into reading interviews per se, but you guys were maybe in Rolling Stone or something, and you and Owen are just sitting on a stoop of some house you're renting. And I just was so intrigued by the whole fucking thing. I like this notion of these Texas outsiders that are here and they made this crazy movie and how did they know? You know, it was all very intriguing. But as I asked about your parents, I'm like, they're intellectuals.
I think it was a little of like coming from Texas and our accents. People are like, wow, these guys read books.
But your family's like from the East Coast, right?
From the Boston area.
Yeah, yeah. And you guys went to Catholic school, right?
It was non-denominational, but it had started as like Episcopalian school called St. Mark's.
Was it all boys?
Yeah, all boys. Very helpful when you already come from just an all-boy family to
get around some more guys.
Yeah, what you need is some more guy time.
Yeah.
All day.
Where were you guys at in the social hierarchy? Andrew had to be popular, right? He's tall and fucking gorgeous.
Definitely had good friends and got along with everybody. I mean, the school wasn't like schools where like the people good at sports were really popular. It was a school where it was like, yeah, this guy's, you know, he's on a roll. He's going to Princeton. And those were people that kind of were well thought of at the school. But yeah, we definitely got along with everybody and had, I would say, kind of a semi-wide circle of friends.
How much older is Andrew?
He's 6 years older than me. Owen's 3 years older than me. I'm 49.
I hope you remain older than me by a few years. It always gives me
How
great
old
comfort.
Are you now?
46.
Oh, man.
I know. We were in our 30s when we...
God,
I don't even know 30s. I don't even know if I had turned 30 yet, actually.
I don't think you had.
No, 2005 I turned 30. Oh, wow.
George Lopez was just telling me, he was like, I just turned 60, man. Let me tell you that 50 to 60... goes like that. I was like, oh my God.
Oh, I know.
I think there is something where, like, scientifically, time does go faster as you get older. And it's like, you can just feel it like kidding around about, like, I mean, to me, like, Idiocracy, even though it seems like a long, long time ago, it seems like yesterday.
8 years ago, I would say.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Not 16.
Eight is a great number.
Yeah.
And I always did that thing, I don't know about you, but, like, when people would say, oh, how long have you lived in L.A.? I'd say, like, I've been out here, you know, 10 years. At the time, it was 12.
Yeah.
I'd say I've been out here 15. It was 18.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then now I kind of have no idea.
Yeah, I'm at 26 years here, which is fucking bonkers.
Right around there.
Well, I watched this. I want to say it was Judi Dench, but I don't think so. I think it was an older actress, actually. In fact, forget that I said Judi Dench. I think it was the woman from Downton Abbey that everyone was celebrating for a while. I forget her name. It doesn't matter. Very, very old actress. And she had a 60 Minutes profile, and they asked her what it's like being 93. Uh-huh. And she said, well, when you're 93, breakfast comes every 15 minutes.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, that has to be accurate because I was journaling
again,
this morning.
Breakfast? Again?
I just had a scone. Yeah. And so I was journaling this morning. I fucking wrote with great horror, 6/1/21. I was like, wait, we're 6 months into the year after 2020? Like, isn't it 2020 was 5 seconds ago? Where
I actually had the exact same thing. I was writing something down today, and I was like, I'm going to write the day and the date on this. And I'm like, this is like a science fiction movie.
It is.
I mean, when you go back to, like, I can remember watching Blade Runner as a kid. We're beyond, I think, whatever the date was in Blade Runner.
Right, right.
Like, yeah, it's pretty wild.
It is. It's pretty scary. It's accelerating. I have a theory on why it feels different. In a nutshell, 6 months when we were 8 amounted to 1/16 of our entire life. Now 6 months, for me, represents 1/92 of my life.
I'm not good with numbers, but I think you're right.
Fractionally, each hour is getting less and less relevant into the whole scope.
Of our time, yeah.
Yeah, like a year when you're 100 is 1/100 of your existence.
Yeah. Also, just like, I find myself thinking about somebody like Willie Nelson, and it's like just the time when all your friends kind of start passing away, and it's happened to people like Willie, and now I even feel like somebody like Jack Nicholson, or I guess maybe Warren Beatty too, where those guys are kind of like the last men standing, and I guarantee you it's the same. Like Chinatown and Redheaded Stranger probably feels like it was yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not comparing us to Willie and Jack Nicholson.
Oh, I am. I think you can be either. I'm happy with either. I'll take the short end of whatever straw that is.
And now I'm thinking like, okay, so what do you do about that? I get up earlier, but now like I'm exhausted at 6. No, so that I find really depressing. Like even today I thought, well, I've got this. I'm going to talk to Dax at 2:30. I'm going to sleep in. I'm going to sleep till 8 today.
So be real charged.
Yeah, just be just super charged by the time I get over there.
Full tank of fuel. Oh, do you have any strategies? Because I actually have them, which is what has occurred to me is like anything novel slows time down. Like if you go on vacation to a new place, the first 4 days feel like 2 weeks, and then the next 3 start feeling like real time.
Right.
So another 60 Minutes profile on Ted Turner. They interviewed Jane Fonda and said, "Like,
what? Well,
did you see it?
Yeah, where he's out in Montana or Wyoming. Yeah,
yeah." And she said, "What's it like being married to him?" And she said, "Well, you have to leave every 3 days. He can't be somewhere for more than 3 days. And then you're on the jet going somewhere else." And I was like, that would be the perfect life for me.
Yeah.
Would you like to just perpetually go somewhere?
Right. I think that was a good profile too, because he's struggling with like Alzheimer's, dementia, and you could kind of tell how much they cared about each other, him and Jane Fonda.
Yes. Yeah, it was a very bittersweet, like you could tell.
He still had pictures of her.
He's in love with her. He just could not stay faithful.
Wow. That's kind of part of the flying around.
Yeah, you got to get out of town.
Right.
In my fantasy of being Ted Turner too, I'm always flying west. So you're always
chasing the sun.
One way to look at it. I just like the idea of picking up 3 hours every morning. Like, it would make me wake up so early. Because, you know, if you go to Hawaii, you're like, oh, fuck, I'm up at 5. It feels great.
I got to start doing this at home.
Yes, I tell myself that. But if you could just keep going west, you're just gaining hours all the time.
I think there's a short story or a short film there.
Short
Westward
story.
Ho. Go west, young man.
Okay. I want to hit Tannenbaums just because, of course, I fucking love Tannenbaums.
20th anniversary coming up.
Is it?
Wow.
Yeah. In a couple weeks, I'm going to be up at the Tribeca Film Festival for this 12 Mighty Orphans movie, and they're doing a couple of Tannenbaums things.
Oh, really?
There, yeah. We're really hitting this age and passage of time thing because that's another one that you just can't believe where it seems like your 8-year theory.
Yeah.
That's an 8 years ago.
Yeah, that feels right. Although, for me, that one's a little more compartmentalized, and I still was looking at it from the outside, man. For me, it's almost like once I was looking at it from the inside versus, that's back when like
meaning
I
would- when you were in the business?
Yes, exactly. Right. Like I was still an aspiring actor, not getting any roles, and then seeing a movie like that and just, I don't know, maybe you're different, but you compute it differently. I'll just remember it as this very cherished, sweet moment where I didn't know why it was good.
Right.
And when you know, it's at best, you're like, oh, they didn't fuck it up.
Before you get in the business, when you could watch a movie just with totally open and you don't know this person or that person or heard stories or like you could think, gosh, I wish I was in that or
yes,
wow, all that stuff that goes into it. That's probably one reason I love reading about music is don't know anything about it, not musical, have no musical aspirations and can really kind of lose yourself in it.
Yeah. Did you use your celebrity to meet musicians or actors?
I never really feel like I used it, and I don't say that in a noble way, but definitely like gone to concerts and definitely been lucky enough to meet musicians that I just love.
Yeah, like you've probably met Bob Dylan.
Yeah, met Dylan, did a movie with him, and
Willie Nelson.
Been around Willie a ton, and yeah, I got to be around Jackson Browne, and through Lucas Nelson, I've got to be around Neil Young.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, just so interesting. I mean, just that to me is probably one of the great things for us to be in this business is you get to meet those people just by chance that you love.
What's interesting is you love movies in a way. You had that romantic thing that you still have with music. But at the same time, you recognize this is silly. Like I remember you saying to me at one point, you're like, I hope I wasn't trying to tell you my acting process, but somehow it prompted you to say, yeah, generally when people start telling me about their acting process is when I get pretty drowsy.
I sound like I had some great advice for a young actor on this movie. Well, that's the thing is I really actually always am interested in someone's acting process, especially as someone who hasn't studied acting, and especially like to see when it works.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always really interested when someone's done a play or done a lot of theater work. Like that's something I've never done. And because people say, gosh, isn't it hard to memorize all those lines for a movie, not knowing that you spend a whole day on a page or two, and it's not hard at all. I mean, not that you don't have challenging days with dialogue, but I'm always curious as to people that have been on stage and how do you remember an entire play?
Yeah.
And how do you like not get lost in it or daydream for a second and lose where you are on the script?
Yeah, I went and saw Sean Hayes in a play. It was just him for 90 minutes talking. And I'm like, you read a book out loud. Like you read a whole book out loud and it's all in your head. It's so scary, the idea of trying to do that.
Well, and whenever I've asked anybody, they've always just said, just repetition.
Uh-huh.
You know, basically saying, yeah, it's hard work. Yeah, I put the time in. Yeah, but besides that, how did you do it?
Yeah. Yeah, other than the real way.
Yeah, other than the hard work, what's the shortcut?
Okay, now speaking of actors, maybe we got to have the same experience, which is I did a movie that Duvall was in. And before the table read, I had never met him. We're at a table read with all these huge actors. I have imposter syndrome. I'm like, how the fuck am I at this table? So starting there. But then talking to Duvall for a minute, he was telling me about jujitsu and meat.
Meat. Yep.
Yeah. So, and you just worked with him. So I imagine he probably told you about meat and jujitsu. He loves meat and he fucking loves jujitsu. So I'm like watching him and he's just this real guy. He's this cute older guy that I've been watching forever, but here he is. He's this human being. But then the table read starts. And I was like, oh my God, this guy can't say a word when he's acting that you don't believe.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't lucky enough like you. I was really only around him for one day, and I just went to work that day to kind of watch him at work. And this is a couple of years ago, and he's kind of hung it up. And he was on our movie, 12 Mighty Orphans. He was friends with Rooster McConaughey, Matthew's brother.
Yeah, he talks about Rooster all the time.
Right,
yeah.
And Rooster,
he's obsessed with
him. Checks in on him daily and talked Duvall into doing this, but I did work on Roadies, this Cameron Crowe show. I worked with a really nice first AD that had done a movie with Duvall. And I think Duvall really liked this AD. But this guy said Duvall was great. And he said that one day he'd had like a little meltdown. They were trying to get a mule to do something. Duvall was like, you can't get an ass to do what a horse is gonna do. You got an ass here. And then he turned around and he was walking down this dirt road and he kicked the dirt and he was like, hooray for Hollywood. But yeah, I think those guys, we're lucky in that we've gotten to be around those guys because I find myself thinking like there would have been like the first actors like Tom Mix and Charlie Chaplin. Then there was the next round, like maybe like Humphrey Bogart and those guys. And there was the next round of like Nicholson and Nolte and Duvall and Brando.
Yeah.
And then like the Bruce Willis, Costner era. So we're lucky in that we've gotten to be around those guys.
Yeah, 1,000%. You're right. I had a hard time locking into the reality that he was talking to me in scenes. I'm like, no, no, this is the consigliere. Like, right. He can't
and
be talking.
My problem is when that happens, I find myself, I stop listening.
Sure, you're just so enjoying
I'm just looking. I'm like, you know, scenes are running through my mind. I'm like, wow, this guy's got amazing eyes. Wow, look at the way his mouth moves when he talks.
Yeah.
And then they finish and they're like, you know what I mean? You're like, I do. I do.
Yeah, I guess maybe in those moments, I'm trying to isolate what the X factor is. Yeah, like, I'm just looking at, like, there's something so powerful here.
Somebody was just talking recently about how incredible he was as Boo Radley in To Kill a Mockingbird, like, where didn't have one line and just had such an impact.
Yeah.
And yeah, his Tender Mercies, I don't know if you've ever seen that. Oh, you should watch that tonight. He plays this old country singer, Max Sledge, but that's easily in my top 10 movies.
Uh-huh.
It's really...
What's it called?
Tender Mercies.
Tender Mercies.
Yeah, you'll love it. I think with those guys, like we think about how the business has changed, and a lot of them deal with it great. Like Martin Sheen, like I always get kind of worried around them too, just because they're from another era when they had much more time. Like they'd wait for Magic Hour.
Yeah.
And now it's they move so fast and furious and shooting on digital that I do get worried about those guys. And I think it does really piss some of those guys off.
Yeah.
That it seems like not kind of as sacred anymore.
Yes.
I know Owen was ad-libbing with an older actor. It was like, are we going to be doing this shit? If you're going to be doing that shit, I'm fucking out of here. I honestly can't remember who it was.
I guarantee it was Gene Hackman. I'd bet my life it was Gene Hackman.
It wasn't Gene, who definitely has a temper, which he uses to great effect.
Yeah. Well, he was like a Marine, right?
Yeah.
He like was no shit.
Yeah.
I would be terrified of him.
Oh, yeah.
Although the little voice in you is like, I'm going to... If I see him bully somebody.
Not me, baby. Oh, God, no.
Now, back to Tannenbaums. I was going to ask you.
You say it funny.
I do.
Yeah. I just
Tannenbaums, and it's Tannenbaums.
Yeah.
You're right.
Just for you.
Good catch.
It's okay. It's like John Huston in Chinatown calling J.J. Gittes Mr. Gitz. Mr. Gitz.
Okay.
That movie is so... God.
It's so fucking good.
Oh.
It really is. It's fantastic. Do you have a favorite one of those movies that you've made?
The Wes era? It would either be, the Tannenbaums or Bottle Rocket. But Bottle Rocket, to me, it had such a kind of sense of melancholy around it because we were always aware that the studio didn't like the dailies and weren't happy with it. So that stuff kind of somehow filtered back to us. So definitely had the feeling like, we're never going to get to do this again. And it's so fun. It's so fun to be around a crew and like learning about the DP and the production designer.
Focus puller.
And John Boccaccio, the focus puller, is actually a great guy. But no, there was, to me, like a real kind of sadness around it. And there was no kind of celebratory feel.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah. So I was always kind of left with that. And I feel like it always kind of affected me for the rest of my career, is that kind of feeling of melancholy about things, is that like, I definitely had the feeling like, we're never going to get to do this again. And that's too bad because this I love.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people would ask growing up, like, what do you want to do? And I just remember saying, like, I don't know, but I want to move from, like, one thing to another. Do a job, finish a job. And that's really what I can remember saying, like, on career day. And I think it was probably influenced by my dad, like, in advertising. I knew that he'd have one client.
A campaign
or a brochure, like a business report, and he'd do it and he'd be really excited about it and finish it and then on to the next thing. But there was also, just that kind of, we were also kind of innocent back then.
It is a bummer though that is life though, that you couldn't just be doing it going like, this is awesome. It is what it is. Maybe we'll get to do it again. Maybe we won't, but we're certainly not going to miss this.
Right. Or like, gosh, this is the beginning of something great.
Yeah.
And this is the beginning of us all getting to do stuff. So there was that, which now I can kind of reflect on in a positive way. But the Tenenbaums, we'd done Bottle Rocket in Dallas and then Rushmore in Houston, where Wes was from, to suddenly then be in Manhattan, and Gwyneth was there, and Gene Hackman, and Angelica Houston, and Danny Glover, and Bill Murray. So that did seem like all of a sudden, like it was kind of supercharged.
Yeah.
And to then shoot on the streets of like New York, which had never gotten the chance to do that, that was very exciting. And always, I did love the script and the story.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was just fun to see Wes get to
have all the toys.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. We got to talk about 12 Mighty Orphans, which we already talked about. Duvall's in it, who we love, and Martin Sheen's in it. We love Martin Sheen.
I had not met him, but what I was thinking about working with Martin is that I kind of grew up in like the Blockbuster Video era where I hadn't seen any of his movies in the theaters. You know, would have been too young for Apocalypse Now.
Mm-hmm.
And just once started getting into movies, went back and saw Badlands. So he was the kind of guy that started learning about through videos.
Yeah. Great score. Remember the score?
Yeah.
It later got ripped off for True Romance.
Right. Real kind of tinkly score.
Vibraphone.
Right.
Yeah, xylophone.
I can't remember who the person was that did it, but yeah, really incredible. But yeah, he's just such a good guy. And also, I think he's an activist and just a great spirit. And like what we were saying, like he's, I think, almost 80. So yeah, I would always be kind of worried about, we'd be in these scenes, it would be me and him, and then we had all these boys playing the team, and we'd be shooting outside, so moving really fast and trying to beat the sun. And yeah, like being conscious of those guys, actors and actresses that are from another era and kind of used to things moving at a different pace.
Yeah.
But he just had the best attitude and loved the boys.
I've had that experience where it's like, I find those guys inspirational. I'm like, what am I so over this for?
Right.
This person's here in a smaller role and they're a legend and they're thrilled. Like, I'm a piece of shit.
Right. I'll think like, could I be here at like 79, like out on the prairie in Texas, being like, yeah, sure. What's next? Okay, great. Instead, I'm like, yeah, you seen catering today? I've had a power bar, you know?
I guess we're having turkey again. I guess that's
sowing dissent as opposed to like bringing everybody together.
How factual is this movie? Because I didn't know this story.
It's a true story, and I didn't know the story either, but once I signed on to do it, a lot of people did know it. Like, friends of mine had read the book, friends of my parents. It was this guy, Jim Dent, wrote the book. It's a New York Times bestseller, and it's about this guy, Rusty Russell, that took over this orphanage in 1939. He and his wife, and he was a teacher and a coach, and it was this Masonic orphanage in Fort Worth, and took it over and kind of turned it around and then turned this football team around and took them to the state championships.
Yeah, which is wild. They're like shoeless orphans that...
Yeah.
Did he invent the role of quarterback? Did I pick that up correctly?
He invented the wing tee. He didn't invent the quarterback, but there is that scene where he says, we'll call you the quarterback.
Okay.
But I always kind of wondered that myself.
Yeah.
We might be trying to slip that in there.
A little fast one.
Yeah.
Now, when I think of you playing him in that movie in Texas, that might give me anxiety. Like, if I had to play John DeLorean, being from Detroit, or if I had to play Lee Iacocca.
I was going
to
say Iacocca, yeah.
I'd be like, I liked that stuff. I hope I'm doing it justice. Everyone's going to expect me to do it justice because... This is my backyard.
Well, I definitely, and it's like we're kidding around about those older actors having meltdowns. I was working at the time, and when I got the script, and I really liked it, but there were these long, long monologues, long teaching in the classroom, math, which that just immediately terrified me, long coaching, like, because I played football, but I was notoriously bad for remembering plays. Like, we'd get in a game time situation, and the quarterback would be like, okay, 9:29, left bottle cap. And then he'd be like, okay, Luke, this is what you do. I mean, I'm not kidding, to where I'd be like, okay, thank you. Or my best friend, Joey Newhoff, would be like, Luke, you got to block the safety on this. So I really was nervous about doing it. I wasn't nervous about playing Rusty Russell. People didn't know what he looked like, what he sounded like.
He wore glasses, apparently.
Yeah, he wore glasses and a fedora. But I did have a thing where, like, going back to like talking about, like, I've always talked to friends who did plays, like, how do you do that? I said to Ty Roberts, I was like, I'm just telling you, I'm not going to be able to memorize all this dialogue. And Ty's such a nice kind of soft-spoken guy. He's like, you know, that's okay. You can get cue cards. And I was like, I can't use cue cards. I'm going to be walking around. So it was the thing where I did, like, never have I a month out from a movie or anything started to learn dialogue.
Yeah.
And then it was like this kind of breakthrough, like, wow, this is why they do it. Like, it's like second nature now. I'm not kind of finishing a scene and be like, I barely made it, baby.
Did you consider an earpiece?
I did consider it. In fact, I even asked about it because I'd heard about, like...
Well, Downey uses one. He used one in The Judge, and he's amazing at it.
I've heard that Johnny Depp uses one here and there, but I wound up actually learning the dialogue as a last resort.
So low-tech of you.
Yeah, but I can't imagine that we won't at some point both have earpieces.
Something about you saying, I'm just not going to be able to do this.
Oh, complete defeat. Yeah. Is that what you'd want to hear from your lead actor going in a movie? I'm telling you right now, this is from like a guy in his 40s sounding like he's like mid-70s. I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to be able to do all this. So you're going to have to find another way.
Let me start this by saying you've hired the wrong person, but here we are.
Stay tuned for more Armchair Expert, if you dare.
We are supported by Rothy's. It's 2021 and nobody has time for uncomfortable shoes. That's where Rothy's comes in. What makes Rothy's so good? Well, their unique seamless design is insanely comfortable the moment you put them on. As you know, they are made from reclaimed plastic that we don't want in the water, plastic bottles, you name it. And they turn them into these most beautiful shoes imaginable.
They're so comfortable too.
Feel free to stink them up because you just pop them in the washing machine. They're fully machine washable. They're available in a ton of shapes, styles, and colors, so you can always find the right ones for you. No wonders Rothy's best-selling shoe, the Point in Black, has over 5,000 near-perfect reviews. Upgrade your closet with washable, sustainable, stylish shoes and bags from Rothy's. Plus, they just launched men's shoes. I have them. They're wonderful. So make sure to check them out for you or the guy in your life. Head to rothys.com/dax to find your new favorites today. That's rothys.com/dax.
We are supported by Primal Kitchen.
I love these products.
Oh, me too. I have to avoid some of the foods I really, really love that are delicious because they irritate me.
Yeah, you have allergies.
That's right. I have a lot of food allergies. Now, Primal Kitchen has a simple mission. Change the way the world eats with real food that uplifts and empowers us. Primal Kitchen makes condiments, dressings, and sauces with real food so I don't have to compromise ingredient quality for taste. Primal Kitchen will get you ready to grill with the perfect cookout companions like mayo, ketchup, sauces, and salad dressings. Made with high quality, delicious ingredients.
They're really, really good. I have a whole fridge full. I have a mayo that has avocado oil in it, which I love because I love mayonnaise so much. So it's really nice to have transparency.
Yes, and I way prefer avocado oil.
Me too.
Never settle. Make every bite of food exciting. You can find Primal Kitchen in your local grocery store or visit primalkitchen.com/armchairexpert and use code armchairexpert to receive 20% off your entire order. This would probably creep you out, but Owen did an interview in Playboy it's just my favorite thing I've ever read. I can't believe how many things I've memorized from this Playboy interview. And one of them was, the guy says, like, how much control do you have over the scripts you sign on to do and stuff? And he said, and I'm going to do your brother, which will annoy you, but I'm going to do it anyways. He goes up. He goes, you know, I try to read the script like once or something. And then what I really like to do is show up on set and just have everything explained to me like I'm a 5-year-old.
Oh, that's I haven't heard that part of it yet.
I got to read this.
I was like, what a wonderful thing to be. Like, no, I'm not going to worry about how this sounds like. This is what I like to do. I like to go there and have them explain it to me like a 5-year-old. The confidence to just admit that. I just loved it so much.
I mean, I've had that happen on this DC comic show I do, Stargirl, where they'll have to be like, Okay, now, what happened last season, Luke, was the Justice Society killed the Injustice Society. Remember that? Yeah, I remember that. I was there for those scenes? Yeah, okay, right. So Icicle's dead. Is that what we're saying?
Oh, my God. I used to do it on Parenthood, specifically like between season 2 and 3. I had directed a movie, so I was editing it while I was shooting the TV show. Uh-huh. So I just wasn't reading the scripts anymore. Right. I get to work and I'd read my scene, but sometimes the scene made no sense to me because it's like there's already been a fight.
Right.
Clearly, we're like at odds. I have this like technique. I would say to the director, like, boy, Adam's pretty hot at me, huh, in this scene?
Yeah.
Like open-ended, like,
yeah.
I mean, because, man, he's hot. What, you
he's
know.
Coming at me, huh? He's coming at me pretty hard.
Begging for them to say, yeah, because you fucked behavioral aid, whatever. Right. But I had all these tricks to try to not admit I had no clue what was happening in the story.
No, I definitely know that feeling. Sometimes it is nice to get a little refresher on where you are.
Yes, why not?
Especially when they shoot out a sequence.
It's complicated. People don't know. They don't start on page one.
But it can be embarrassing when they turn to you and say, like, now, Dax, what happened in the last episode was...
Do people always try to do your accent, Owen's accent, for you?
Yeah, I mean, and it doesn't annoy me at all. I've definitely heard it. I've heard good ones. I've heard bad ones. Sure. I've heard ones that are spot on.
I'm afraid to ask, but now would be
Should
the perfect time to give me an out of 10.
Okay.
You've heard them all.
Yours is pretty good.
7?
6.5?
I'd say it's a 7.
Okay, yeah. I'll take that.
I'd say it's a 7. It wasn't what I was expecting.
Oh, wow. I got to hit you with one other thing from that interview.
I got to read this.
It's the most tremendous thing ever. He gives a masterclass on breeds of dogs. I guess he was reading a book about dog breeds at the time, so it was real fresh in his mind. But the guy said, do you have a trick for getting out of tickets? He said, well, I don't think it's a trick as much as, like, when you get pulled over, you're just trying to build to that moment where you look at the cop and he looks at you and you both kind of share a smile like, look at us out here on the side of the road, both playing our roles in this crazy game called life.
That's a great one.
Isn't that? What a special person.
I will say, yesterday I was at his house. I'd gone out there to meet up with him and his sons. And I was sitting outside reading the newspaper and he walked out and he was like, home, honey, I'm high. And I started laughing, and I was like, God, that's great. And I was like, what's that from? And he's like, I just made it up. And I was like, there's no way.
I can't be.
He says he made it up.
Oh, you have that same thing. I've memorized so many things you said on that movie that cracked me up. And I used to be able to do you pretty good, but I've lost it. Oh, my favorite thing that I took forever on with me after our time together was I used to say to you before scenes quite often, I don't know if you'll remember this, but I'd be like, you want a curveball? And you would always go, oh, I love hitting curvies.
Oh, I love hitting curvies.
I've said I love hitting curvies for the last 16 years on nearly everything. Hey, if you want to throw a curvy at me, I love hitting curvies.
How you feel about a curveball? We got to get Mike to put the band back together.
For real, what a great idea.
How fun would that be?
I would in a second.
I can never sell him on the idea. It's like, oh, yeah. I'll be like, Mike, seriously, man, people love the movie. We should do it. Yeah, I get a lot of love on the movie.
I would do that in a fucking heartbeat. Although I will say, unlike you who can watch it, I can't.
Are you kidding?
I cannot watch myself in that because it was such a swing for the fences. And, you know, I don't know if you even know this about this, but they made me come in and redo the whole thing in ADR. Do you know this?
No.
Oh, yeah. The studio, of course, hated that character. And so I had to go in there and fucking loop all of his lines with no speech impediment. It sounded insane
saying those lines.
Yeah, so I did that, and then I think, again, like your story of Bottle Rocket, it kind of like scarred me. I'm like, oh, did I ruin this movie? There were moments where I thought, I'm the reason this movie's not coming out.
Well, I'll even see, like, the way you have your hair, and I'll be like, he would look like normal and good after work, coming into work, but then like, look at that haircut. Like, how incredible that he's like on screen and not vain in any way. No, really. Like, you always think, oh, I kind of, yeah, I don't mind looking a little goofy, but yeah, definitely want, like, can at least my hair look kind of cool? I mean, yeah, I'm going to be wearing like this crazy
polyurethane shirt.
That's the kind of thing that drives me crazy, is somebody like saying, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's get that guy back in here. The guy whose character name was Frito. Have him redo all his dialogue.
Oh, in his normal right, voice. Yeah, sounding smart. All right, so I'm in. So we just need, I guess we need Maya and we need Terry.
We need Maya, Terry. As a Michigan guy, have you gotten into Elmore Leonard?
Oh, I mean, in that I love Out of Sight, which that's based on one of his books, right?
Yeah.
And I think they even shot at a friend of his house up in Bloomfield Hills. Do you like Out of Sight?
Yeah, love it.
Fucking love that.
Yeah, and he loved Out of Sight, I believe, and like was a real fan of like George Clooney and stuff.
Yeah, and then the Get Shorty books were
Get Shorty
from him.
Was great. Yeah, I don't read much fiction, but in the last few years, I've like gotten into where I'm just down to like his last few books and like starting to kind of panic or think, well, I can just go back to the beginning. My memory's so bad.
Yeah.
It'll be like reading a new book, but he's incredible.
Huh, I've never read one of his books.
Oh, man, and would be fun for you, just there's so much Michigan stuff. I mean, he does Florida stuff, too, but there's a lot of good, like, Michigan stuff and Detroit cop stuff.
Yeah, he's cool. Yeah, he's
really
got
cool
a real
guy.
Vibe.
He has some good stuff about sobriety, too.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, that I've read.
Well, Luke, this has been so fun to see you. I can count on one hand the times I've ran into you in the last 16 years. I saw you in New York one time. Uh-huh. We were both walking down the street in New York, and I saw you. And then that might be it.
Yeah. So you live on the east side, I live on the west side.
Never the tween shall meet.
Yeah. Well, let's not make it be that long.
No. Well, even if it is, it'll feel like 6, 7 years.
Exactly. Yeah. The way we're going, it'll seem like yesterday.
I'll see you in 15 minutes and 10 years.
Yeah.
12 Mighty Orphans. It opens in Texas, as it should, on June 11th, and then it opens nationwide on June 18th. Excited to see you. It's so
great
awesome.
Great to see you.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
And thank you for taking the time. This was really fun.
And now my favorite part of the show, the fact check with my soulmate, Monica Padman. Please hold. I'm placing your call. Please enjoy your conversation with Mr. Smith.
Is that what they used to say?
In the 40s?
When you were like 14?
Yeah, 1940 when I was 14, tender age of 14. Well, I was born in 1930. Yeah, I'd be 91.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're still really with it. So
oh, if
good
I'm
job.
Like this at 91, sign me up.
I know.
Yeah. Otherwise, don't sign me up. Like, we just had this conversation where we were talking about living forever, life expectancy of future generations.
Oh, right.
And, yeah.
It's much higher.
Yeah, it's higher. But I was saying, someone was basically proposing like, oh, if you could pull back 30 years or 20 years, like shave it off, like go back in time.
Okay.
And I was like, no, I want to stay this, which makes me happy.
Yeah.
I like being 46 enough that I don't want to go back. I want to stay this.
I don't want to go back.
Right?
I don't even know if I want to be this age. Like, I might want to be a little older before I get stuck in my age.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. If we get to like get stuck in an age, I bet I would want to be like 38.
I felt like you were going to say it.
Really?
Yeah, I felt like 38.
I'm excited for 38.
Oh, you're going to knock it out of the park.
I wonder what it'll be like then.
So that's in 4 years and 2 months?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. 4 years and 2 months. It'll be 2025. That's all I have to say about that,
that's
I guess.
That's all we know. Those are the only things we know.
For sure is that it'll be 2025 in 4 years.
And I'm excited to see where I'll be. I mean, 4 years and 2 months doesn't sound like that long, actually.
It's not. Increasingly so.
But when you go back 4 years and 2 months, I am in a completely different place in life. Completely.
Yeah.
We hadn't even started this thing.
I know.
So
your roommates
so much
were just about to move out.
Before I moved here?
Mm-hmm.
I've been here 4 years.
At least, yeah.
Really?
Oh my gosh. This is a big
episode. This is a big revelation.
I think so.
Okay, you know it's a good
Tell
way
me.
To know.
Tell me how.
Did I live here when Trump was elected.
Great way to think about it.
I don't think I did.
Really?
Yeah.
You think you cried at our house and then went back to your apartment?
Yeah.
Your other one?
Uh-huh.
Huh.
Actually, I know, and I remember a lot of subsequent conversations. I remember having them in that apartment with family.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but soon after that.
That's a big mile marker for you.
Well, every 4 years.
That's true. For real, the only, I think, I mean, I can remember snapshots of that one for sure. The only one I really remember, like, where I was, the whole thing was Obama.
Yeah.
Like, we were in Bora Bora.
Oh.
She was shooting couples retreat. The whole island was like erupting.
Yeah, that's fun.
And it was like, it was a little sad to not be here to celebrate it.
Yeah.
But also it was like really fun that everyone on the island was really pumped.
Happy. Yeah. That's awesome. That was the first election I ever voted in.
Oh my gosh.
Which is exciting.
They were waiting for
you. I was in college. Anywho, it's just really fun to do that experiment. 4 years ago, where were you and where are you now?
Mm-hmm.
And do you like the path? Do you not?
Yeah. Yeah, my life wasn't as dramatically different 4 years ago. So it's, oh.
Oh my God, pardon me. The drama.
Jeez, wow. It's a little warm in here. We were going to address that. And now that I've made a clumsy error, it seems like an appropriate time.
It's 99 degrees in Los Angeles and I don't have air conditioning.
Mm-mm. That's not fair. You have it in the kitchen.
So in case
we wanted to do this podcast in the kitchen, it would work.
No, it wouldn't because it'd be so loud.
All we hear is that loud window-mounted AC unit.
That's the thing. You know, climate change has really fucked up LA specifically because it gets really hot now in the summer and it didn't used to.
What I've noticed is more than it gets hot, we have humidity now and we never did.
And mosquitoes.
Fucking mosquitoes.
I know. It didn't get this kind of hot. It didn't used to, which is why they didn't have all this, they didn't have central air in a lot of these places.
Oh, right.
And
right.
Now places should have central air because it's too hot.
Yes. You're right.
But they don't.
I don't think it was a matter that it wasn't as hot. It's just they didn't, all these were built in the 20s. They didn't have like good AC units and stuff to.
Yeah, but I feel like building owners would have to put it in if they, like in Georgia, there's no such thing as no central air. Like,
right.
Doesn't matter how old it is.
Yeah.
You'd have to put that in if you were renting out a place.
Yeah.
But they could get away with it here for a long time.
Yeah. A lot of places in Michigan don't have it. And it's
really?
Fucking hot there in the summer. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I remember being at my grandparents' house every summer. I used to spend the whole summer at Papa and Grandma's. And they would have these huge box fans in all the windows. And the windows, like, lifted up. You know, they slid up. And they were almost impossible to get up.
Yeah.
And then you'd slam the box fan in there to keep it rigid.
Right.
Sometimes there'd be double box fans going in one window. And they were trying to get the airflow to go through there. And it was just insufferably hot. And
yeah.
You just had all these fans going.
Oof. Ooh, mm-hmm. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Papa Bob would sleep on the floor in the living room in his tighty-whities.
Oh.
Yeah. He was too hot to wear anything but tighty-whities.
Yeah. See...
That's no way to live.
This is not a good way to live.
One step away from a caveman.
I know. Well.
Anywho.
Climate change. Okay, so Luke Wilson.
Yes.
I want to say something about Luke Wilson that I didn't say because I actually didn't think about it until we got to the Royal Tenenbaums part because I forgot that he was in it. Like, I just hadn't thought about that being on his resume. Then it came up and I was like, oh yeah, I fucking love that movie so much. Callie and I loved it.
Oh.
And we loved him in it.
Yeah. He was so sad.
We had crushes.
Well, you in particular. I can't speak for Callie, but I always speak for you.
Yeah, I wanted to fix him.
Yeah, he was sad. He was melancholy, and he was on the verge of crying for sure all the time.
Yeah.
And you needed to help him.
But then he had a shaved head in part of it, and we liked that look.
It looked great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very few people can pull off a shaved head.
Well, he did
well
it.
As he, well, he's a very handsome guy. Symmetrical, yeah.
I have that movie poster at my parents' house.
It's a great poster. All the, you know, all the production design is so specific and stimulating in most Wes Anderson movies. But I'd say that's kind of the high watermark is Tannenbaum's.
Yes. I was really into movie posters for a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you're into movies and acting. Yeah.
So... Can you guess, since you like guessing stuff?
Yeah.
The first three movie posters I bought.
Can I have some sense of what age you were?
Well, Royal Tenenbaums is one of them, so.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
So I was in, I guess I would have been in
high school.
Like late high school, early college, probably.
Mm. Okay, I'm going to go with the obvious. Good Will Hunting?
Yes.
Yes, and Royal Tenenbaums.
Uh-huh.
Am I saying that correctly now?
Tenenbaums.
Tenenbaums. And
it's a hard one.
Yeah, number three, Ocean's 11.
Oh, my God. It was Ocean's 11, but that's not what I was thinking in my head.
No.
Yes.
No. This is worse than Xanthem Gum.
Oh, my.
If I know your posters better than you do, wait a minute. How could that be?
Yes.
What are you saying?
Because I'm thinking in my head of one specific one. But when you just said it, I was like, oh, yeah, shit. I did have that.
Yeah.
And I bet it was like the second or third one I got.
Mm.
But
what
was
the one you were thinking
Garden
of?
State.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Most vaguely artistic photo on the.
Wow. Xanthem Gum Ocean's 11. Wow.
Wow. What a moment. And this one was live, thank goodness. Well, all the more reason we should be record. We should have like implants so that when we have these Xanthem Gum moments, they're recorded. I hope everyone knows what we're talking about with Xanthem Gum. They must.
You can remind
them
quickly.
Xanthem Gum. Monica said she had made up a song about Xanthem Gum. I said, please sing it for me. She said, I refuse to sing it for you. I said, is this the song? Xanthem Gum. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Xanthem Gum. And she almost had a heart attack.
Yeah. That's crazier than Ocean's 11. That was.
I don't know.
Yeah, because you know I love Ocean's 11.
That's
so
true.
You went in with some.
I don't know why I.
Why the hell would you ever come up with that tune? It makes no sense.
Mm-mm.
Wow.
We still don't know. Still a mystery.
That's one thing we don't know. Unlike in 4 years.
If there's a God, when you meet he or she,
uh-huh.
It will you inquire, hey, what happened with that Xanthem Gum song?
Yeah.
How'd that happen? Will that be in your top 10 things to ask him? Like riddles of your life?
Or alien. If it's, I don't know who it'll be that
I see. Whatever all-powerful being when we meet them.
Yeah. Yes. I will ask the Almighty.
Okay.
And I will report back because I think I'm probably going to go before you. So I'll send a sign.
That is a really weird thing to think.
Well,
statistically speaking.
I hope we go at the exact same time.
Sure, that'd be ideal. But odds are, very strong odds are that I will pass on before you do.
Oh, this conversation is making me scared. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
All right. Okay.
Anyway.
Xanthem Gum.
Well, it's kind of a ding, ding, ding to Idiocracy.
Mm. Like, how so?
Well,
future,
time travel.
Mm. Were we talking about that?
Well, like, I'm going to travel back to tell you with a message why it was Xanthem Gum.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, it's a little bit of a stretch of a ding, 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 but it still kind of works.
Yeah. Well, what's great is he didn't have to solve the riddle of time travel for that movie. He just solved the riddle of cryogenic technology that you could go to sleep for 1,000 years and then be brought back.
Well, it could be a ding, ding, ding because we could be in those things right now. Like cryogenically frozen could be part of the simulation.
Yeah.
And probably is.
Yeah, I really got convinced watching TV, I guess, last night. That it was the thing David was saying and that we're actually just running inside of a computer as a model.
Yeah.
To figure
out.
That
part was complicated.
Yeah.
There's also versions where basically on a set and like really there's nothing behind that wall.
Mm.
But when I get up to go there, they've like set it.
Mm.
Isn't that crazy?
It is. The thing I got hung up on is if we're a computer model to find out what the best way is to get out of environmental collapse, let's say, that's being run in a computer. The whole point of a model is it models it out in 1 second.
Right.
So what we experience time inside of the model differently, like it's got to play out with all the data it knows about us.
Well, maybe we think. Maybe in our brains they time out like that, but
in our brain right now this is timing out to be 80 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But for them this was a 0.3 second model that the computer ran. Whoa.
Oof.
Oh.
That's very scary.
Oh, that's scary.
Okay, Luke, the 60 Minutes profile that you watched, was it Maggie Smith?
Yeah. Was she in The Crown?
No.
Okay.
Downton Abbey.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Downton Abbey. Yep. Then that was definitely her because it was at the height of the Downton Abbey.
Well, you know who she is. Professor.
Tinkle pants?
Something's happened to my brain.
Yeah. It's contagious.
McGonagall.
Ah.
Oh, my God.
Is she at a Hogwarts?
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I guess that would rattle me if I forgot an element of Smokey and the Bandit. I don't think it could happen. I think long after I've forgotten my family members' names, I will still know Buford T. Justice's
name.
No, all of his dialogue.
Don't get your identity caught on that, because one day that's going to happen and you're going to feel really upset. You're going to feel upset because this is what's happened to me with friends.
Right.
I could never have seen the day that I couldn't recall a line or answer every trivia question correctly or not know the name of the episode when someone and I can't do it anymore.
Yeah. Remember you used to ride me pretty hard about my memory in earlier days?
I did.
3 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, mine's gotten bad.
Welcome to the party.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think mine getting bad has anything to do with yours also not being great.
Yeah.
But mine has definitely gotten bad.
That could be a side effect of the antidepressant.
Yeah.
Or give me just a Diablo sandwich and a Dr. Pepper. Make it fast. I'm in a goddamn hurry.
Is that from Smokey and the Bandit?
Yeah, it's because
bank robbing, baby shit compared to what this dude's been up to.
Oh my God. What if you just did all of it?
The whole movie.
Yeah.
Probably could. He pulls up on the scene, the side of the road. I'm seeing it right now. He's, hold up on that car, fine gentleman. There's guys stealing hubcaps.
Oh.
They put their hands on their thing.
Oh my God, we're going to do this.
No, I guess we won't.
Don't play with yourself. You can think about it, but don't do it.
Did Aaron love it too?
The most. He and I can do the whole movie together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys watch it together as boys?
A ton. Yeah. We watched it the other day when he was in town. We watch it once a year. And every time, it gets us every single time.
Wow. I used to watch Now and Then with my best friend, Gina.
Oh, Stuart Masterson in that?
No. Hair Play and Massages and Now and Then. That was the...
Now and Then, is that with Downey? Robert Downey Jr.? He's in love with the mom, but it's the daughter's in love with him?
No. Oh. Now and Then is four women. They were all best friends as kids growing up. They all get together later in life. Mm-hmm. They hadn't been around each other in a while. And then it's like looking back and it's flashbacks. It's such a good movie. And we would watch it, I mean, 3 times a week.
And you're sure it wasn't called Beaches?
I'm sure.
Okay. Sounds like a similar
story. I'm 100%
sure. Okay.
Four friends.
Uh-huh.
And then they're like kind of solving a murder mystery along the way. It's incredible.
That sounds great.
Watch it if you haven't seen it. Shout out. But isn't that fun? Like Now and Then is a movie that I feel like most girls have seen.
Yeah.
Maybe Smokey and the Bandit is the same for boys.
Well, I don't know a boy who's not seen that movie. Yeah. That's my age.
Right.
It was also the second biggest movie of 1977. Yeah. It was an enormous hit.
Yeah. Same with Now and Then.
Just behind Jaws. I don't think
so. Now and Then was first in 1977.
International box office?
Okay. What year is Blade Runner set? 2019.
Oh, boy.
November 2019.
Well, we blew by that.
Oh, my God. This is a time travel. Ding, ding, ding.
It is. Now, at this point, you're right. You've got your ding.
Thank you. Yeah. I earned it.
Yeah, you did. You fall for it.
One thing that we should shout out, we're both listening to an incredible podcast.
Yes.
That was told to us by our friends at Spotify.
Yep. Called Wind of Change.
Yes. And it came out last year. But you know what's so funny is the guy... The journalist who narrates it and did all the investigation, he is the author of the book I'm listening to on opioids.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't have that fun ding, ding, ding part.
Yeah.
And I still loved it. It's really crazy. I'm not far enough to know whether it's...
I'm not either.
But the premise in a nutshell is the very, very, very famous, world famous song, Wind of Change by Scorpions, a German rock band.
Which wasn't insanely successful in the US, but... Was
globally in 92, it was like the song.
Yeah.
One of the most successful songs they said of all time. And it's all about Wind of Change. It's clearly got a political message. And of course, the Berlin Wall had just fallen and the Soviet Union was about to break up. So anyways, there is this, I guess, conspiracy or information this person has that the CIA wrote that song.
Yep.
And that it worked.
It's so fascinating.
Yeah, it's really fascinating.
I would highly recommend it.
Stop listening to our show and listen to Wind of Change.
No, you can listen to our show and Wind of Change both on Spotify.
Boom. Really well done.
Thank you. That's all.
Love you.
Love you.